When I'm looking at the next 12 months of my life, what I do not have on the books and what is impossible for me to have on the books is a trip to Sicily. However, the next best thing to having my own adventure in Sicily was reading Joe Piazza's new novel, The Sicilian Inheritance. It is a vacation in a book. If your vacations were sexy murder mysteries that also dive deep into generational trauma, but not in too heavy of a way, it is the perfect book to take on a plane. It is the perfect book to read next to your public pool while taking breaks to yell at your kids. It is the perfect book to get you out of a reading slump, and it is available now wherever you get books.
Today's episode is with one of my longtime friends. I love all of our episodes, but these are particularly fun because I get to just be me, which longtime listeners are probably like, are you ever more you than you are on here? You already have no filter. You say the most ridiculous things. Fair point, my friends. Fair point. But a catch-up is always nice. It really is. Today, we are talking to Corinne Steindler. Corinne used to be a gossip columnist with me in the trenches, and we actually competed against each other. She was at the New York Post, and I was at the New York Daily News, and it was like the Coke versus Pepsi gossip fight of the early 2000s. But because Corinne is a wonderful, magical human being, we became friends, and I just love the shit out of this girl. She has since had a massive career shift from journalist to postpartum doula. And as a woman in my early 40s, so many of my friends are going through their career transitions. Like, I think we're all looking at the future and thinking about, oh, okay, who do I want to be in the world when I'm 60 years old? Or how will the world change and how will I need to change to meet this moment? So coming up, we're going to do a lot of episodes about women who completely changed their career paths in the middle of life. I love these stories. I also love talking about career pauses. So if you took a career pause when you had your kids and then came out the other end of that career pause wanting to do something else, I want to hear how you did that. And that's exactly what happened in Corinne's life. So we're going to dig into that. And this is just a really fun conversation that also focuses on the need for postpartum healthcare for women. And I was saying this to Dory the other day when we were recording an episode of Too Much Money where we talk about billionaires. And I was like, if I were a billionaire, I would not go to outer space. I would not try to find the Titanic. Those people are dead already. I would fund postpartum care, like both medical care and just care, like taking care of women after they've had babies. Everyone should get a postpartum doula. Everyone should have someone come to your house and hold your baby while you shower and make you a snack and check in and make sure that you're okay. And so that's my billionaire project. That's what I would do. I would just, you know, take care of all of the women. Fuck outer space. You heard it here first. Why you gotta go to Mars, Elon Musk? There's people here on this planet. Just saying. Hi, old friend.
Hi.
And I'm not saying old as in you're old. I'm saying old as in that I've known you for about 20 plus years.
We knew each other when we weren't old.
When we weren't old, when we were young and hot and running around town like little rascals.
In circles, really.
Truly. In circles. Yes. So Corinne was my competition for many years. She was the gossip reporter at the New York Post, and I was the gossip reporter at the New York Daily News. And back before the internet was such a thing, that was a big effing deal because mm-hmm. we were literally competing against each other every day. And yet we fell madly in love and became friends.
Well, it was always such a friendly competition.
It really was. It wasn't like me with Chris Wilson, who I would like stare him dead in the eyes and be like, I'm going to take you down, motherfucker.
Well, and then you were my boss.
And then I was your boss. I mean, because everything is cyclical. I said the best advice that I give to young women is always be nice and be kind to the people who are working at the same level as you are, because they will hire you one day.
Yeah, I've hired you. You've hired me.
Yeah, we've hired each other. Yes, exactly. I was like, there is nothing like being a bitch in any industry will not serve you, my friends.
Yeah.
No.
It's also just kind of like a nasty way to live.
It's a bad way to live. It is. But not you are no longer a reporter. You have completely switched careers, which is something I think our audience really likes to hear about. And it's something I like to hear about too, because every day I'm like, I'm not writing another book. I'm very tired. I'm going to go become an electrician. If they will have me, if the Electricians Guild will have me. It's their steady work, okay? And I know this because we can never hire an electrician to come fix our 15 light switches that just don't turn on, and we just pretend that that's fine. There's high demand for electricians, so it seems like a good, steady job.
Yeah. Come to my house, because I'm glad to know I'm not the only one flipping 19 light switches before,
right?
I can figure out how to turn on a hallway.
Nothing works. Yeah. Nothing works. And the house, like the downstairs was redone and it still doesn't work. Still doesn't work. So tell us what like your career evolution and switch. What did you do?
Sure. Well, you know, we were kind of working together in the lovely suburbs of New Jersey at the weekly Mags.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. I was pregnant. I had my first baby. And I was still, you know, driving to New Jersey, pumping every 3 hours, pumping in the car on the drive home.
Yeah, that office was so gross.
Baby.
So gross. I want to tell our audience this. The glamorous life of working in glossy celebrity magazines.
Oh, yeah. It's gross.
Yeah. I want to tell the audience about how glamorous this was. We worked for a company called Bauer, which was a German company, and they loved saving money. And they weren't wrong. Like, this was not a dumb move on their part.
I mean, the salaries were good.
The salaries were great. But they were also like, because they're coming over from Germany, they looked at real estate on one side of the river and on the other side of the river. And they're like, why would we ever have an office in Manhattan? It's stupid expensive. We will put our office in like a weird strip office mall
in Englewood Cliffs
and pay people more money and also save a gajillion dollars. And like, yes, was it super annoying to cross the bridge every single day? Sure, but the money was good. And like, those
benefits were good.
And the benefits were good. And
that New Jersey parental leave.
I know.
So it was like a baby factory. Like everyone would just take that job
and make
have
babies.
All their babies.
And make babies.
Like 18 weeks.
And the magazines also survive like cockroaches because they're just really good at not paying for like a fancy office space in New York.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But it did mean that I was like smoking Parliament lights in a parking garage in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. Before I got pregnant.
Before you got pregnant. Although one of my favorite stories ever about smoking while pregnant was that my dear friend Cheryl Connolly, who was an incredible editor at the New York Daily News, she was in her 50s or 60s when I first started working there. And that was when everyone still smoked in the office. And she told me she was pregnant with her daughter and standing on the subway platform back in the 80s. And some guy told her to put out her cigarette. And she goes, shut your mouth. I'm smoking for two. Yeah. Yeah.
I won't name her name, but there was one New York publicist who's pretty famous who smoked throughout her whole pregnancy. And this was in the 2000s.
I think. Oh, I know who you mean.
Because she wanted the baby to be small, so she didn't.
She didn't have
that difficult labor.
Yeah.
I remember this. Okay.
Well, yeah. Corinne does not recommend smoking to make the baby smaller, but it's good that we're talking about this because it transitions us nicely into your new job.
Yeah, it does. So I'm a postpartum doula.
We are going to take a quick break here. Be right back. Under the Influence is brought to you by Honeylove, my favorite shapewear of all time. It really is. I can talk about Honeylove all day long because it's truly that excellent. Yes, the Honeylove bra is the one that I'm wearing in my author photos. Yep, just wearing a bra under a hot pink blazer. Because you know what? I've got some big Sicilian energy. I do. And Honeylove gives me that. It gives me this confidence to just strut around like a bold, brash goddess. Yeah, I know that sounds like hyperbole, but have you seen my author photos? They are freaking hot, my friends. They are. And as I start packing for the Sicilian Inheritance book tour, you know that I'm bringing my Honeylove shorts and my Honeylove bra because I'm going to tuck it all in where I want to be tucked. I have so many gross old bras in my drawers that I know it's time to throw them out. It's time to make space. And I am vowing to spring clean my underwear drawer. I am. I'm going to finally get rid of that Patagonia bra from 2012. If you too are going to spring clean your underwear drawer, why not grab yourself some Honeylove? You can get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/influence. So to support our show, check them out at honeylove.com/influence. Treat yourself to Honeylove. You deserve it. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, and I am very much a parent, you have your fair share of big talks with your kids, especially if your kids happen to read your very adult novels because they're an advanced reader and you just can't rip it out of their grubby hands. But that is another story altogether. One of those big talks that you should be having is about money. I talk to my kids about money all the time because it is something that my parents didn't talk about with me. Greenlight can definitely help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I have recently started doing an allowance for my 6-year-old, and he loves it. He also loves doing chores for money. Like, I do not think that we can start them too early these days. And Greenlight makes it very easy for him to see exactly how much money he is making for which chores. It also helps my kids, even the four-year-old here, build financial literacy and independence by learning how to earn, save, and spend wisely. The Greenlight app also comes with an in-app financial literacy game called Level Up that helps kids build money confidence through videos, bite-sized challenges, mini games, and more. More than 6 million parents and kids use Greenlight to learn how to make responsible financial choices, and I am all in. I'm having a good time with it. I tried a lot of allowance apps, and many of them were very, very bad. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/influence. That's greenlight.com/influence to try Greenlight for free.
So I'm a postpartum doula. And that basically just, sort of evolved out of trying to make the freelance life work in the media industry and slowly watching, all my editors get let go from all the places I was writing for and the rates, plummeting. And then just kind of deciding, I had my second and just kind of deciding, I'm gonna kind of just be with them. So I stopped working outside the home for almost 2 years.
What was that transition like? Because I think a lot of women get nervous about the career pause, especially when they've been working for so long. How was it for you?
I mean, it was sort of this kind of like a force that was outside myself. I don't feel like we sat down and really like thought about it and weighed the pros and cons. It was kind of just like, there was just this one day, like our nanny got really sick. We had the kids like didn't have coats. There was like no food. And I'm like, this isn't working. Like, this is really isn't working. Mm-hmm. And the nanny was like, I don't know when I'm going to be able to come back. So it was like, we weren't even sure we had childcare. And I was just like, I'm just done. I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to deal with them. And I guess I always kind of thought I'll start going back. But the more I was home with them, the more it just seemed like it was working so well for our family. Like, I wasn't a trad wife or anything. It wasn't like making sourdough or like milking a cow, but I was definitely finding like meaning and purpose in being with them, which surprised me, I guess. I always kind of thought I would just hand them over and work. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
So, you know, there was a little bit of soul searching around like, what am I now without like an executive editor title and like a place full of adults to go every day. But I had been writing about, you know, before I kind of took a pause and focusing on, as a freelancer, a lot of these conversations around postpartum health, postpartum care in society, you know, the lack of support for, you know, moms, whether they are working outside the home or not, just a general sort of like American dystopian view of postpartum health that I felt was, you know, present. And so I decided after a couple of years of being home with my littles, you know, maybe I'll take this postpartum doula certification course. And it will kind of jumpstart me being able to kind of pitch and write. Maybe I'll become like this postpartum, you know, expert as a reporter. And I started doing the work in order to certify. And I felt so like this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
My God, I love that.
So
I love that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what, tell me, I want to hear what you have to do to become a doula. I had a doula for my first birth because I lived in San Francisco. And I mean, essentially you walk down the street as a pregnant woman and people stop you and say, I'll doula you. I was checking out at Buyright, the stupidly expensive grocery store in our neighborhood. I mean, it was insanely expensive. You get like two blocks of cheese and some crackers and it was $90. But the woman at the checkout counter saw that I was pregnant. It was like, oh, yeah, yeah. May I please be your doula? And I was like, no, I don't want this. And as we got closer to the birth, I just got scared because it was my first one and did not want Nick to be Googling while I was in labor. I really hired a doula, frankly, to support my husband more than me. To be like his assistant and tell him what to do. And I'm really appreciative because our doula, Vincenza, was a former labor and delivery nurse. Mm-hmm. So she was also a badass in the delivery room. Like when Kaiser wouldn't let me check in the second time I showed up because they had no beds. Also, I just love to trash talk San Francisco.
Hospital healthcare systems. I mean, like,
and all healthcare systems.
Every birth story, it's just like, and yeah. Then.
And then like, this terrible thing happened.
I had a baby in the hallway and they were mad at me.
I know.
What do they think happens here in the labor and delivery unit of the hospital? Like, this is where people come when the babies are
ready. Yeah. She made sure they didn't send me home a second time. So yeah. The second time around, I'm like, I know the drill now. And the third time around, she just fell out of the Grand Canyon of my vagina.
Which is lucky. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes the third is like a triathlon again.
No, she just fell out. So I appreciated having a doula. So tell me everything about becoming a doula.
So I just want to say I'm actually not a birth doula.
Because there's other types of doulas. Yes, yes, yes. Explain this.
I had a birth doula twice for both of my kids. And she's amazing. Her name's Megan Davidson. She's in Brooklyn. She is incredible. She also wrote this amazing book called Your Birth Plan, which I think is great for anybody who maybe isn't going to have a doula, but wants to like understand sort of what the different paths of birth are. And she was super empowering. And she was like, I thought a birth doula was going to be somebody who was like, you have to have a water birth and no epidural. And, you know, you're a devil if you don't breastfeed. And I was sort of not in that mindset. I was kind of like, you know, I don't know what kind of birth I'm going to have. I want to be open to options. And she was really empowering around that. And so when I went to kind of go into this work, I was really focused on the postpartum period for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think I would be great in a hospital setting. And I'm really not a bodily fluid person. It's just not my thing. And there's just a lot of that in birth.
Yeah, it's gross. I mean, birth is gross. And just, I like to say that. I mean, people are like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I'm like, you poop. I mean,
people are pooping.
You poop. Yeah.
There's blood everywhere. I'm just like, I just don't think that that's my.
That's not your jam. And it's fine.
Not my spot. But, you know, I really felt this huge, huge lack of care around the postpartum period. I saw so many of my friends, you know, pushing through those first 6 to 12 weeks, just being like, I just want to get back to work so I can get a break. Anxious, depressed, malnourished, like nobody helping them. And going like, this is crazy. You know, every other culture, people come and they make all of your food for you and they clean your house and they hold your baby and you just kind of like stay in bed and feed your baby. And don't do anything but get better. And here it's like, chop, chop, get your body back. You know,
I see them
at the gym with like their huge, like postpartum, you know, boobs. And I'm just like, go take a nap, girl. Like, you do not need to be here right now.
No, unless you want to. Unless you really want to. But honestly, you don't have to. Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, like, you need to rest. Like your body's been through a lot. And nobody knows. Like everybody's like, I didn't know I was going to be bleeding for 3 to 10 weeks. Yeah. I didn't know that, you know, I was going to get diastasis or, you know, not fit into my genes after having baby. It's better now. I think people know more now, but 7, 9 years ago when I was having kids, you know, people were kind of shocked at what was happening postpartum.
I do think it's better now. I think more of us are talking about it. But yeah, when I had Charlie, it was a massive shock. I was like, there's just, my body's going to fucking leak for 10 weeks maybe, or, and I'm still going to look pregnant right afterwards too. I just, I mean, you know, baby weight. That's all we talk about is baby weight. But I was like, no, I look pregnant. Like I still have a pregnant belly. I don't think I even realized with the first birth that the placenta was going to come out or that peeing was going to be hard or pooping was so hard and just all of it. All of it.
We're just not taught. We're just not told.
We're just not taught.
And it's like, we're these, you know, it's like, you can do the same thing as that boys can do, you know, growing up, like you can be equal. You can do this. You can do that. And you're like, yeah, I can just have a baby and then like jump back to my, you know, capitalist patriarchal role in this, you know, wheel. And you're like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. No, I can't.
I need a donut to sit down. I can't tell you this.
I need to sit on a donut because my vagina hurts so fucking much.
And I just think it's really, I just was really angry about that. I was really angry that no one had told me that these things were going to happen. I was really angry that there was all this pressure to like breastfeed and do these things, but like zero support for it. I think like 2 months before I had Kai, the Obamacare thing about covering the pumps and like legally making space to pump had just kicked in. So you know, I'm fighting with HR about like, this is my legal right. You can't put me in the bathroom, you know?
No one puts Corinne in the bathroom.
No. Gross.
Gross. Totally gross.
She's a bower bathroom. Like,
no. Oh God, that bathroom was gross. That was a gross bathroom.
I'm like, you know, there was still a lot of that going on. And I, and, you know, after Layla, things were a little bit better. You know, the conversations were starting to happen, but I was going to clients. So, you know, I'm certifying, I'm doing this program, I'm learning. You know, I already knew a lot because I'd been through it. I'd also been a babysitter since like forever. I always loved babies. I mean, I just do. I'm like, I'll take your baby. I'll hold your baby. I was always like that. And I'm in these environments because, you know, I had to support people for 20 hours in order to certify. And I felt like I was really, really helping people. And I felt like I was shocked still at the fact that people felt so much like they had to do everything on their own. Like these new moms could not ask for help. It was so hard for them. And so to be in a space where you're just sort of like, I'm going to help you and you don't have to ask me to do anything. I'm going to anticipate what you need. I'm going to just wash your pump parts. I'm going to make you a snack. I'm going to remind you to take a shower. I'm going to take your baby and tell you to go lay down. And just how much that was so different and counterculture to what was happening, I think was really like attractive to me, you know? And then the further I got into it, you know, I realized like not that I don't interact with men. I mean, the partners and the dads, if they're in the picture, are there. But it's really a space where men don't assume that they know more than you.
We are going to take a quick break here. Be right back.
It's really a space where men don't assume that they know more than you.
It is. It really is. I say this a lot, that men often, you know, if you're married to a good man, which we are, they want to help, but they're also kind of helpless. Like, especially with the first one, they don't know what to do. By the time we got to number three, Nick was a whiz at washing, like what you just said, washing pump parts. Like, that's all I want. I'm like, I want someone to wash my pump parts so I don't have to do it. And you know, he was just like a wizard at, all right, I finished pumping. You take the pump parts away from me. I will never see them. I never want to see them. Okay.
He knows the drill.
But in the beginning, how does he know? Because again, much like we're not told that our bodies are going to be broken after pregnancy, they're not told how to help.
Or what to expect.
What to expect when you're expecting is fucking bullshit is what it is. Okay.
Like, no one told me I was going to be, like, crying on the shower floor.
No.
Day four because of, like, a ginormous hormonal surge that happens because you're, like, your birth hormones are leaving your body and your milk production hormones are entering your body. And that's, like, a lot.
No, and no one tells you that.
In a body.
It's so much going on in a body. You know. One of the things that was shocking to me was when I quit breastfeeding, again, another hormone drop. And so I got incredibly anxious and incredibly depressed. And I didn't understand why, because no one told me. And once I finally found out that it was because all of the breastfeeding hormones were going away, and no one had told me this, I wrote a story about it for, I think, Cosmo or Elle, you know, one of the magazines. And I still get 3 emails a week from women who, when they Googled, find that instead of medical advice from a doctor.
Yeah.
Because that is the only information they can find out there is my 7-year-old magazine article about my depression and anxiety. Like, that is not okay.
Well, it's really because doctors are not trained in breastfeeding.
No. No.
OBs and pediatricians are not, that's not part of their medical training.
Which is just insane. It's like, are you caring for women? Is this like, do you want to take care of women?
It's like the baby comes out and everybody's like ability to know what to do with you as the birthing person is like zilch.
Totally. And I, you know,
except this, I will say, in the realm of postpartum depression, which, you know, for better or worse, because there's money to be made from a drug industry, they have invested time and effort into. And now I'm very happy that there is, you know, so many new breakthroughs in supporting people who have some of those issues. But it's because there's...
Because there's money to be made. Because there's money to be made.
Sadly, exactly. Yeah.
Sadly, so, yes. Yes.
So it's like the baby comes out. The pediatricians now are the ones being trained to screen for postpartum depression because your OB is not going to see you until it's too late. But they're not, the pediatricians didn't learn about breastfeeding. You have to find a lactation consultant, which from, I am not here to speak ill of lactation consultants. I have met many amazing lactation consultants. On the other hand, I'll say a good, healthy handful of the clients I go and support have had really negative experiences with lactation consultants in the hospital or outside the hospital. And you, so
you should not trash lactation consultants, but I can, because I know some great ones. I do, but I've met them outside of my own experience. Like I had some really bad experiences where they were, first off, they made it seem like if I wasn't breastfeeding, I was a goddamn monster. And I will say right now for anyone who needs to hear it, we gave all of my children formula very early. I did a mix of formula and boob milk, and my kids are like freaking geniuses. So like, there's nothing wrong with them.
Well, and me too. I took my kids formula and breast milk, and I had a ton of milk and it wasn't enough.
Yeah. See, I did not have a ton of milk. My boobs are weird. My babies have never been able to latch that well.
Yeah.
No, they were tongue tied. I think there's a whole racket going on with tongue tying too. Untongue tying. But like they've never been able to latch. And every single time, you know, Nick is there and he's like, it's because you have big nipples. And I'm like, it's not because of my big nipples, Nick. And I'm like, also, stop. Don't say that out loud. But maybe it is. Maybe it's because I have big nipples and they can't get them in their mouth. But I'm Sicilian. That's what my nipples look like. And they could, but they eventually did it. But I just didn't make enough milk for them. I wasn't good at breastfeeding. They didn't like it. We did it. Also, it is sometimes easier at night than like, you know, getting up and doing the bottle.
I mean, being good at breastfeeding. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I hear this so much from moms is like, they want to be good at all of these things. You know, they want to be good at taking care of babies. They want to be good at soothing their babies. They want to be good at breastfeeding their babies. Like, I don't think that exists. I think it's just like, it's really hard, all of it, no matter what.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You could have one thing that's working well for you, but something else won't be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, breastfeeding was relatively straightforward for me with my first, but it wasn't easy. And he never slept.
Yeah.
So I had people who were like, I can't make milk. But I'm like, but is your baby sleeping like 3-4 hour stretches? Because mine goes 90 minutes round the clock.
Yeah.
So like something might be going well, but another thing is not. And that doesn't mean you're not good at it. It's just hard.
It's just hard. And, you know, I like to say there's no such thing as a quote unquote good mother. Like we're all doing it. We're all trying.
You know what? You're the best mom for your baby.
You're the best mom for your baby. Exactly. I mean, there's like,
okay,
you know, Ruby Frankie. Ruby Frankie's a bad mom, for example.
But like these outlying examples too are just like, okay, that's just like an unwell person.
That's an unwell person. But you know what? You are the best mom for your baby.
You're the best mom for your baby. And the book doesn't know you and the book doesn't know your baby. And you can read the books and maybe they'll help. Maybe they won't. But if there's something that you're like, you know, I've had so many people be like, I just want to go back to work so I can feel like I'm good at something. And it's like, where are we in this culture where women always have to feel like they're good at stuff?
Exactly. Why do we always have to feel like we're succeeding in order to feel fulfilled?
I mean, I look at men and they're just like mediocre and they're like, they feel great about themselves.
They feel so good about themselves.
I mean, not all of them. There's some exceptional men. I'm not saying, you know, all men are mediocre, but just like even the ones that are kind of like, eh, you're okay. Their confidence, they're how they feel inside.
How they feel inside is like really through the roof, except for my husband, who weirdly is the only like tall, handsome white man I know with imposter syndrome. Which is just shocking.
And he's just great, though.
I know. I know. And he's like, I don't know. I don't think I'm good enough for this. And
yeah. Well, maybe some of them are faking it till they make it, or maybe it's a cover up, but
it's totally a cover up. But still, yes. But no, like I'm the majority, saying, like, I mean, like
men don't put this level of pressure on themselves to be good at everything or to be successful in all areas of life or to feel like they're achieving all the time. And I just look around at women and it's like, you know, maybe there is no being good at this part of life. Maybe it's just taking care of yourself and your baby the best you can until it's a little bit easier. And then maybe you can feel like, okay, I'm really good at crafts, or I'm really good at putting the cute things in the lunch, or I'm really good at, you know, bath time. Like maybe later on you can pick a thing and be like, I'm really good at that. But to be really good at something like breastfeeding is like, what does it even mean?
What does it even mean?
Half of it's on the baby.
I'm a champion breastfeeder.
Yeah, right. I'm really good at it.
Really good. I could squirt milk in your eye from across the room.
Yeah. So, but you know, the baby has to also be really good at it. Then
I know. Exactly. And my babies were fucking failures at it.
Yeah.
Okay?
So maybe it's fucking failure. Maybe your babies are just not good at breastfeeding.
Maybe your baby sucks at breastfeeding. Okay. Maybe
I don't know. It's just, I think there's just so much going on there. And I really feel like when I'm in people's homes and I'm with them in these really vulnerable moments, I have an opportunity to kind of push back against the mainstream conversation that's coming at them from all other sides. And to me, that feels like doing feminist work more than, you know, maybe just writing articles into the abyss.
I mean, we really write articles into the abyss now. I don't know how. I mean, no one.
I mean, you don't, as people find your articles, but mine are kind of like, I don't know, lost in space.
I don't know. I will say, like, I wrote a really great story for Cosmo, the big Sicilian energy one about like being bold and confident in the world. And it just came out yesterday and I love it. But I don't know how readers find it is the thing. I'm like, I love Cosmo and I love the work they do, but you know, are people going directly to the homepage? Or like, is it just through social media discovery? Is it just through my social media discovery?
Yeah.
It really, like so many things feel like shouting into the void. You're a really, really good journalist, by the way. So just to sum up, I want you to tell me, what are the three things that you try to do for your clients? So, you know, that someone who doesn't have a postpartum doula can know to ask someone else for this when in the postpartum period.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the three things I really try to focus on when I'm with a client and, you know, especially in the daytime visits where you might be there for 3, 4, or 5 hours, let's try to make sure you eat something, take a shower, and maybe get a little bit of resting time in. So, you know, that's kind of what I'll focus on when I get there. I'll say like, did you eat? Did you shower? Do you want to take a nap? Depending on like when the baby has to be fed, we'll try to get all three of those things in. And when that happens, I feel like, you know, that's a really successful visit. So if you're someone who doesn't have a postpartum doula, you can kind of ask people, you know, can you just take the baby so I can shower? Can you make me something to eat? You know, if you have two adults in the room, one person can hold the baby while the other is making you food. And that's like a really great way to take a shower, eat something, and then feed your baby, then take a nap.
Totally. You know, it's so funny, all of these three things that you're saying. Could someone come over and be my book launch doula? Because I haven't showered or rested. And I kind of need someone to be here and be like, it's time to shower. You smell.
But getting a book out into the world is kind of like having a baby, right? I mean,
totally the same exact thing.
Birth your books.
Birthing the book. Guys, order The Sicilian Inheritance. It'll be here like tomorrow if you order it right now. And you're going to love it when you get it. And then you get to discuss it with all of the people who have already ordered it. You're going to be a part of the coven. It's very exciting.
I can't wait. I'm checking that doorstep every day.
No. Well, it was funny because I was at Barnes & Noble last night and the boxes had come in with The Sicilian Inheritance. And I'm like, just put them out. And they're like, we can't. Like, we're not allowed. And I'm like, put them in the window now, guys. And then I signed them.
You're just standing out front of the Barnes & Noble with your box of books.
Yeah. And they're like, give it back. That's awesome. Sorry, Lynn. It's a great book.
I love you, Joe.
I miss you. I'll come see you in Chicago, and you can doula me. You can be like, yes. Okay, Joe, I'll post about your book while you take a shower.
Yeah, I'll order you some seamless.
Yeah. Exactly. That would be a really great service from your agents. To be honest, who are like, okay, I know you're really busy right now. I just ordered you some sushi.
Yeah.
Are you listening? Are you listening to what I need this week?
Both agents slash doulas.
Slash doulas. Exactly. All right. I love you. I will talk to you soon. This has been magical and wonderful. And that is all we have for today. We covered a lot of ground, my friends. A lot of ground. Did we solve the world's problems? Probably not. But whatever. I love Corinne's path to finding something that she is so clearly passionate about. Like, I can hear the passion and joy in her voice. And that is just so nice to hear from a friend. It's so nice to feel that they are in the right place at the right time. It is. Now, we are a week out from The Sicilian Inheritance, and I gotta go be a fucking monster. Sell this book. Still selling this book. Order early and often. Order it for your friends. Order it for a stranger on the street. You can walk up to a stranger and say, hey, do you want to get out of a reading slump? Let me order you this book, my friend. It's not weird. That's not weird at all. Mm-mm. Do that and then go do something nice for yourself. You deserve it.